Introducing Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB, AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. Welcome back to the show, Rick, and happy American Thanksgiving.
Happy American. I think you guys get the jump on us in Canada, right?
Yes, we do. We do it on October, and Canada started celebrating Thanksgiving 60 years before the U.S. did.
I think it's becoming, if not the most popular American holiday, it's becoming more and more popular. It seems like it's very hard to politicize. You know, if you want to diss Thanksgiving, you're literally sort of going after mom, apple pie, and the flag. But so Thanksgiving seems to have survived political correctness, even though, of course, not everyone eats a turkey. Turkey dinner. It's more like a turkey tofu for a lot of households.
We have chicken or Greek food or sushi. Yeah, I'm the only one of my family in Vancouver who likes turkey for some reason. So every fourth Thanksgiving or so, I get to have my turkey, and then it's something else.
Well, you got to have it. I mean, I think even the people who don't like turkey must love turkey leftovers, as who doesn't, right?
The best sandwich.
It really is.
What's going on with gold right now?
I'm liking it. You know, we had a move in, for one, GDXJ. That's a symbol that tracks exploration stocks, junior gold stocks. And it's just had this nice liftoff move where on the hourly chart it got past five or six prior peaks. So that's the kind of thing that you see at the beginning of major moves, major bottoms. And I even like the fact that it's not acting quite as feisty today, but it hasn't pulled back much either. So I think that gold is finally turning here. And the miners have been so thoroughly depressed that you look at them and you think, why not, right?
The U.S. dollar, how's it doing, and how does it reflect on the price of gold?
Well, the dollar had an enormous move up, and of course the correction that's played out over the last couple months was necessary and probably has not yet run its course. You know, people look at it and think, well, it's over for the dollar, it's had its run, but I don't think so. As long as I keep to my deflationist view holds, and nothing convinced me that it won't, that we're not going to have a disastrously deflationary endgame, I'm implicitly bullish on the dollar. But the dollar has corrected in a pretty normal way since late September. Dollar index topped up around 115, and we traded as low as 105 and change. So it's not a severe correction, but I do think that the dollar's weakness is going to, it's finite.
A lot of people have the theory gold and the dollar can't go up at the same time. What's your take on that?
Well, I think we're going to see, we're going to be in exceptional times, and I think that that the strong gold and strong dollar will be able to coexist. Just don't be in any of those other currencies, though. You know, especially Bitcoin. And so I think that when the dollar starts picking up strength, gold is going to be enjoying a lift from other factors that can coexist with that strong dollar.
The problem with Bitcoin, perhaps, even if it takes another dip and you think it's a good opportunity, your funds might be tied up in a bankruptcy proceeding and you won't see any, like FTX.
Yeah, there's a lot of that, you know, a lot of grinding of teeth. I should have had it in my own personal wallet, well, rather than in the FTX wallet. I've got a lot of subscribers who are much more knowledgeable about Bitcoin than I am, and they're pretty bullish on it, but I have to say I don't agree with them. You know, I've always asked the question, well, why should Bitcoin be worth anything? And whatever argument they give me is always one flavor or another of scarcity. You know, scarcity is the argument, and in that respect, you know, the original Bitcoin, the Satoshi creation, had a certain cachet, and I think it got bid up as high as it did because there was only that limited 21 million supply of Satoshi Bitcoin, and in a speculative sense, there was overwhelming, insatiable demand. But I never saw the case for $69,000 Bitcoin in some fundamental way.
Well, Bitcoin, the ultimate in speculation and the minimalist investment. Like, you're not investing in anything. It's not most investments you expect to grow and have some basis for their wealth. Bitcoin, it's just an imaginary thing.
Well, it never really had even the value for transactions that was envisioned. I think the blockchain concept is infinitely useful, and it will play out possibly even in some form of money, but I'm just not on board for this idea that the globalists are trying to implement digital money. It's going to make those greenbacks, ones, fives, tens, and twenties, even more valuable. And that's acknowledging that the dollar itself is not perfect money either. It represents essentially it's a form of debt, and there, of course, is nothing backing the dollar other than the, I put this in quotes, the full faith credit of the U.S. government. But the government has no credit other than what it comes to through taxpayers. And, of course, taxpayers have been in reasonably good shape in recent years, but that's not always going to be the case. So I think, you know, I acknowledge that the dollar has been fundamentally worthless for a long time, but in the sense of utility and habituation, it's gonna be what you want to keep around in a shoebox and on that day when the banks don't open.
Yeah, and the U.S. dollar itself, you can flash one in the Amazon or in the Congo or the Australian outback. Everybody knows what it is, and they trust it.
Yeah, they do. I mean, it's the dollar has universal recognition. I don't know what they're using over there in Europe these days, but I'm not sure that anybody trusts the rally that we've seen in the euro. It winds up being kind of it's like buying a stock in Europe. Well, I guess same thing for the dollar. You're really buying stock in the U.S. of A. But, we've been on a rising tide for so long that you have to kind of imagine what things could look like when the tide starts to recede.
And the government at any time can dip into your bank account as well, like what happened in Cyprus.
Yeah, Cyprus was kind of a one-off thing. I think the lesson there is don't put all your money in a bank that all the Russian oligarchs are using. You know, the Cyprus bank wasn't just some ordinary little branch somewhere. There just happened to be a lot of very dirty money there.
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Rick, how do you think Elon Musk's takeover of Twitter is going to play out?
Well, it's not working out too well as a business deal. You know, I wrote my current commentary at rickackerman.com is about how it compares to discusses similarities between Twitter and Bitcoin. But, you know, all the employees are leaving in a huff. They're kind of play acting the whole thing because, they know, and Musk is going to find out, to his chagrin, that you can start Twitter of your own probably for a few million bucks. And you hire some high school dropouts to code for $20 an hour. And, you know, if you look at Twitter for what it is, it's just a place in the cloud where, you know, people post their thoughts. It shouldn't have been worth even $40 million, much less the $44 billion that Musk paid for it. So, you know, he could fire pretty much everybody and they could keep the servers running and everything will be fine. The advertisers have deserted there, but of course they're all whores, and it's not like they're really principled. They'll come back when the eyeballs return to Twitter. So I don't know. Musk overpaid in large part for reasons of goodwill. He was buying a lot of goodwill that turned out to be non-existent. And he'll never really recoup his investment. I mean, not ever on that, not even remotely. And it remains to be seen what kind of platform or what kind of discussion Twitter attracts. But from this point forward, Musk can do no right, really. Even his decision the other day to he let a few people back on the platform, most famously Donald Trump, but I think he kept Alex Jones off the air, and I guess it's reasonable to say that if he's really against censorship in any form, that even crazy Alex Jones should be back on Twitter. So Musk will have a lot of hard decisions to make. But he's not going to be a popular guy no matter what he decides.
Well, when he said he wanted Twitter to be an open forum, he sided with the Republicans in the midterms. He's allowed to have a political opinion. But doesn't that isolate half the American population on the other side from him? And that's a lot of potential eyes for ads.
Yeah, that we're pretty much split 50-50 as a country now. And however innocuous the argument, it's always going to alienate half the country. You know, my theory about the election, even though there's been 10 zillion words written about why the Republicans didn't see that red wave and this and that, but I think the very simple explanation is that we are perfectly divided 50-50 red and blue, and that everybody now votes tribally. No matter how compelling the issues, and we certainly had compelling issues in this election. You know, it's always said that it's the economy stupid and people pay attention to their wallets, their grocery cart costs and things like that. And there was so much attention, it was such a critical problem in the economy that you'd think that it would have had its effect on the election, but it didn't. So, and neither did the crime in the streets, and it's not like that's insignificant either. So these are all things people see and they experience, and yet they still voted exactly 50-50 almost for Republican Democrat. So that's where we are. We are just exactly 50-50 divided on all the issues, and the issues no longer matter as much as tribal affiliation.
How does that help or hamper when it comes to efforts to try to control inflation? And do you think just hiking interest rates will do the job?
Well, to take a couple steps back, I think that it presages a day when we're going to see some demagogue rise to a point of leadership. You know, we're divided, really. But we have the luxury to sort of argue the issues now, to think in political terms. But I think it may not be too terribly long before we're thinking in survivalist terms, like where are we going to get food from and how we're going to eat and how we're going to stay warm in the winter. And that will have an effect, of course, in reconstituting political life, the political organization of this country. So we're going to be voting on things that affect life, that are life or death. And, you know, I'm just fearful that some demagogue will rise to the top with supposed solutions for these life-threatening problems.
How did you feel the first thing that Biden did as president was cancel the XL pipeline, and then a few weeks later he's begging Saudi Arabia and China to produce more oil when you had reliable oil on the way from Alberta?
Well, I've, to be honest, tuned that out, really, all that stuff. There's no limit to the number of things that you could say that reflect badly on Biden. He's an idiot. He's senile. The fact that he's actually considering a second run is reason enough to kind of invoke the 25th Amendment and cashier the guy. He's the worst thing that's ever happened to the presidency. So, you know, when you talk about one little thing that he did, cancel the pipeline, and for sure he bears a lot of the responsibility for the increase in energy prices. Even without doing much extra drilling and fracking, we would have much lower energy prices if the talk alone were one that favored exploration and perhaps, you know, the development of nuclear power in this country. But we're sort of headed in the wrong direction right now, because the head of the NRC was an Obama appointee, and he's anti-nuke, anti-nuclear power, which has never been the case. You know, it's one thing to have people regulating the industry conscientiously, but it's another to have a nutcase in charge of the licensing nuclear plants, who's strictly anti-nuclear. So the guy is so bad, apparently, that the two fellow commissioners took the unprecedented step of going to Congress and saying, you know, you got to do something about this guy. So we're so politically bass ackwards right now that there's really no hope. I mean, even if we were to go whole hog again, fracking and drilling, it would take too long for things to come on stream. And of course, when you put a guy like Fetterman, quote unquote, in charge of Pennsylvania, the issues in Pennsylvania, such as drilling, there's really no promise to bring new sources of energy online anytime soon.
Well, as long as he can find some chewed up old large hoodie to wear, he'll be happy.
Yeah, I think if all of our senators, that would be, people would say, oh, well, you're being, I don't know what it is to make fun of mental cripples like Fetterman. But yeah, maybe all the Republicans should show up in Congress one day wearing hoodies.
Well, I was just thinking of his dress sense, not so much, his physical problems or health problems. A lot of us have adversities to overcome and do a great job. Despite them. Now, taking a look at energy, how do you think crude's going to do and natural gas going into this winter?
Well, I'm finally happy to see crude falling, because that makes sense to me. You know, you have China's economy is not exactly booming right now, and of course, China's use of energy prices it at the margin. So I could have projected targets above 100 and did, but I never really understood them. But with crude falling out of bed right now, and I've got a target as low as, I think it's most immediately in the low 60s, that is more closely congruent with my idea of where the global economy is headed, which is basically into the crapper.
Rick, anything else that we should be taking a close look at?
Oh, well, this is a very frustrating bear market, you know. Sometimes I wonder we should even be out there arguing about it. I guess some people have one way of seeing the world and others another. I don't see a way out, really. We're having to pay the bill has come due, really, for all those boom years, and they put us deeply in hock, and I'm just surprised and frustrated at how slowly the bear market is playing out. There's certainly enough room in there for all the idiots, droolers, and rubes to say, no, we're going to new all-time highs. And I can't say categorically and definitively it'll never happen, because stupid things do happen. But, we're in a very sort of slow-playing bear market. When I look at it in the one bellwether stock that I think you have to get right, and that's Apple, I see it's easy to project 2023 as an eventless year stock market-wise. If you put Apple's big ups and downs within a channel, you could see that it could go a lot lower without really collapsing, and it could go higher, probably with more of a chance of breaking out to the upside than it does of cracking the lower band of the channel. So I think of Apple as headed eventually under $50 a share, way under 50. But for now, I really can't see too much below the channel, which is well above 100. So the lower end of it. So if you just sort of realize that the economy isn't going to fall apart, if the world's biggest stock is just hanging in there, then there's a case, technical case to be made for a long, long muddle.
Yeah, I think so Apple just admitted we're all out of innovative ideas. Just hold on for what we have, which I thought was pretty strange for a high-tech company.
Yeah, and they really don't seem to get punished for it, and in relatively good times, meaning we're not yet in a global recession or depression, the iPhone is still selling somehow, but they'll sell a lot less of them. I think they're very vulnerable, as the most vulnerable consumer products company in the world, because their merchandise is so pricey, and as far as the bankruptcy of ideas, you know, that's... That when you see that each new iteration of the iPhone is simply a better camera, it's like we all need better cameras now, because the features like not taking a picture unless everybody in a group shot is smiling and stuff like that. I mean, 25 years ago, autofocus was like the impossible dream, but they've gone so far beyond autofocus in terms of what these cameras can do, that in practical terms, everybody with an iPhone camera, it's equivalent to we're all out there driving Lamborghinis with the top end of 210 miles an hour. So I'm not sure how I don't think it bodes well for Apple's for iPhone sales that they're pretty well saturated and that the product is dependent on a healthy and thriving economy, so that everybody replaces their iPhone for one with a better camera every 2 to 3 years. I think it's great, though, that after, you know, decades of iPhones with lousy batteries, that they seem to finally have gotten a handle on that part of the problem.
Yeah, well, basically now you're looking for a good camera that has telephone features.
Yeah, and the camera revolution has been pretty amazing. I used to be, did a lot of photography myself in my newspaper days. I had a newspaper darkroom to use, and it was a lot of fun, but the purists who used to swear by, Kodachrome and, even the filmmakers who like Kodak stock, they're amazed at what you can do with digital images. I think it's maybe killing the movie business, though, because they can do so much digitally now that you look at anything that's visually impressive on a screen and you think your first thought is how fake. It's because it looks absolutely real, and it's kind of like, you know, they've gotten artificial diamonds down so well that the only way you can tell the artificial from the real is that the artificial is just too perfect. So the films are too good, the effects are too amazing, and so the irony is you're sitting there watching all these amazing effects that are absolutely real visually and thinking, what a fake.
Yeah, the more real it looks, the fakier it is. Rick, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Always a pleasure, Jim, and I guess I'll look forward to our next chat in a couple weeks. Anybody wants to tune in on Rick's Picks and our amazing chat room, you can get a 2-week trial subscription just by going to rickackerman.com and clicking the trial offer at the top.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. Enjoy the turkey. If you have any questions for Rick or any of our other guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com, our YouTube channel, Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.